When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So we had a pitching coordinator that actually called me at the end of July, or is either at the end of July or midway through July. I think it's midway through July. And he said, hey, we're calling up this kid. We just wanted to let you know that your name was in the talk as well. You know, you're doing things right. You're on the right track. Just keep doing what you're doing. And about 2 weeks later, felt the flexor again, and it got tight, and it just didn't feel right. And I kind of thought, oh no, terrible timing.
Welcome into another episode of Baseball America's From Phenom to the Farm. I'm your host, Kyle Banduho. Today's episode is with Sam Wolf, a right-hander who was a sixth-round pick of the Rangers in the 2013 draft as a senior sign out of the University of New Mexico, and who just wrapped up his eight-year career in professional baseball. Sam is the first player on the show who hails from South Dakota. We talked about the benefits of hailing from the state's high school ranks and how he turned himself from an athletic guy with a live arm into a polished pitcher over the course of three college stops. We'll also talk about how team camaraderie changes at different levels of the minor leagues and when you should and shouldn't pitch through injury. It was a great episode. I was really happy that Sam could come on, break down his career, and talk about how he made the decision to step into the next phase of his life. Episodes of Phenom to the Farm drop every other Tuesday. If you enjoy this one, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and go check out past interviews. And if you haven't yet, leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Also, make sure to subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. College baseball postseason is here. Today is the day. We got the field of 64. Go check out the team's breakdown of that field, everything else on the site, the main pod feed, great stuff on the other pods, future projection, and the 90th percentile. With that, let's talk to Sam Wolf. All right, joining in for today's episode from Phenom of the Farm, he was a sixth-round pick of the Rangers in the 2013 draft out of the University of New Mexico, right-hander Sam Wolf. Sam, thanks so much for joining for Phenom of the Farm.
Oh, of course, Kyle. Thanks for having me.
I've been looking forward to this a little, I guess, behind the scenes. It'll be a little more of a familiar conversation than usual. Sam's older brother, Garrett, was my roommate in college. I've known Sam for a while. I've been, ever since you decided to move on to life after baseball. I've been looking forward to this. So ready to jump into it. Sam, when did you realize you had a future at the next level?
Honestly, maybe in college. I was drafted out of high school. It was late rounds. And I think that kind of opened my eyes to, give me the hope that, there is a shot after college. If I keep going down the right path, keep doing the right things, there's an opportunity after college for me to, continue playing and go on to that professional level.
So you and I were the same graduating class, 2009. So it's kind of on the fringe era of specialization, got to jump into one sport, that whole thing. In South Dakota, you did a bit of everything sports-wise, like growing up in that state. How much baseball did you play on a yearly basis versus all the other stuff you did?
Yeah, with South Dakota's weather, it really is impossible to play year-round, obviously, which for me, I felt like it was kind of a blessing because I was able to play multiple sports and, not really get burnt out on one or the other. I'd go pretty much from basketball in the winter. I did a little bit of track in the spring my senior year, and then would go right into baseball in the summertime, then have football in the fall. So it was nice to get a variation of different sports and kind of made me feel like I was a little bit better of a well-rounded athlete. It's a double-edged sword, though. Obviously, not playing baseball year-round, you always look back and wonder, how much more sharper, how much more polished you could have been, getting the reps on a year, consistent basis like that. But I don't know. I think that, growing up in South Dakota, I probably played baseball, probably five months out of the year. We'd start spring usually right around April. really wouldn't get outside until late May. You know, and then the season would start. And, you know, for our program that we have here in South Dakota, you know, we played a lot of baseball during the summer. I mean, usually, you know, more than a high school season. I mean, we'd get sometimes, you know, 60 to 70 games in a summer. So we were getting a lot of reps in kind of a shorter period of time, which, you know, I do think kind of got me ready for that next level, you know, the college level and even professionally, just because you are playing that much. You know, you're playing 4, sometimes 5 days a week. At the professional level, obviously you're playing basically every single day. So I do think that I had a little bit of insight, you know, just in the summers here with how much you were playing, you know, on pretty much a daily basis.
With that though, South Dakota, not known as like a baseball hotbed, not your Texas, California, Florida, one of those. How often did you have to travel maybe outside the state, you know, those perfect game tournaments? Cause that was when that action started kind of picking up to reach people in a little more in your talent level as you got into high school and started being a guy who was getting recruited, thrown pretty hard.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think when I was playing here in high school and Legion baseball, you know, we really kind of stayed around the Midwest, you know, Denver, Minneapolis area was kind of our, you know, further ones that we'd go to, Omaha, Nebraska. So really we were getting seen regionally. But, you know, if you did want to kind of get out a little bit, you kind of had to do it on your own. And like you said, going to, you know, Perfect Game Showcase was kind of one of the big eye openers for me. You know, I had talked to maybe a handful of schools for college baseball and, you know, had a couple different scholarships and opportunities to go play, you know, in some schools around the Midwest. And then went to a Perfect Game tournament down in Jupiter, Florida. And I think after that tournament, I mean, you know, talked to, I think, 20 plus schools. And it kind of really opened my eyes to just, you know, holy cow, there are a ton of eyes out there, but you got to put yourself out there. And, you know, not many people are going to come up to South Dakota to watch, you know, one, maybe two kids if they're lucky, you know, in a day where they can go to California or Texas or Arizona and see, you know, 15 in one day.
I need to talk about that roster that you played on in Jupiter. I texted you about this earlier. I don't know how up to date these old Perfect Game websites are, but the Ohio Warhawks at that in the World Wood Bat in Jupiter in 08 has you on there. It has Chris Bryant, Mike Clevenger, Corey Hahn, Luke Jackson, Jeff Malm, who's an alumni of the show, Steven Matz, Tyler Skaggs. That's a lot of big league, a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
In there.
You know, and I was so, I think, just naive at the time because it was my first, you know, Perfect Game tournament that I was even going to, you know, outside the Midwest, really, and didn't really realize the caliber of high school players that I was with. And, you know, was, like I said, fortunate enough just to be on that team in general and get to go down there. And then, yeah, you know, a little while after, you're kind of seeing the players that you were playing with and you're going, oh my gosh, yeah, I was pretty lucky to be on that team.
You're just watching the draft, be like, oh, that guy. So yeah. You mentioned you start talking to 20 schools. Again, being from South Dakota, there's not really a state school that if you want to play high level baseball, you're heading to. How did you frame your college decision as far as, because basically almost anywhere you want to go to play high level baseball, it's basically a flight. So how did you kind of frame and start looking at where do I want to spend my next 3-4 years?
Yeah, I think the first, I guess, hurdle that I had to kind of get or figure out, kind of navigate was, you know, did I want to go as a position player or did I want to go as a pitcher? You know, obviously coming from South Dakota, I was more so a pitch or a position player, you know, and really didn't transition to pitching until I was in college. And so I think that was kind of one of the first decisions, you know, kind of big decisions that I had to make in my baseball career was really deciding what path did I want to go down, you know, be a position guy or a pitcher. And there were some schools that were, you know, for position opportunity, shortstop, third base, second base was kind of where I played. And then there were some that were for pitching. And I think at that point, you know, I kind of had talked to enough scouts, you know, just on the college level and professional level to where, you know, I think they kind of hinted towards me that, hey, as far as your upside and like your future and going into professional baseball, you have a great arm and that's going to, you know, probably be your best avenue. And I think I kind of just decided and agreed with that and said, yeah, you know, I had a decent arm and, you know, hadn't really been able to, you know, truly dive into the pitching side of baseball and, you know, committed to that and went there for, you know, the University of San Diego as a pitcher and honestly just fell in love with it. It felt like I was playing a new sport because I had never really known how to pitch up until that point.
What was the pitch from San Diego? Why was that the pick for you as far as, you know, your college choice?
flying out there in December from South Dakota. that made
no brainer.
That was the first thing that made it pretty easy to get on board. Yeah, when you're flying out to San Diego from South Dakota, it's, you know, -5 in South Dakota. You go to San Diego and it's 60 and sunny during the day. And yeah, that was hard to beat. You know, the campus itself was incredible. The coaching staff, you know, I got to talk to some of the players that were there, and you know, I was just kind of really blown away at their track record. They had, you know, draft picks out of there, I think, at the time. I'm trying to think, was it Mattis? Brian Mattis was one of the big picks out of there. And I think was only a year or two, you know, drafted before I got there. And so I just felt like, you know, that was a good opportunity to get a lot of eyes on me while I was in college, you know, playing on the West Coast, playing the schools that they play. Like I said, just really felt like it would be a good opportunity for not just my college career, but, you know, the potential of going on to the professional level as well.
You mentioned you did get drafted out of high school by the Angels, though. What were those conversations like? Was that ever a serious avenue as a senior?
You know, not too much. I think it was more of a, you know, we were pleasantly surprised that it happened, to be honest. I wasn't expecting the professional level out of high school by any stretch of the imagination. I think, you know, I had started filling out some questionnaires and talking to some different professional scouts out of high school and wasn't really sure if, you know, how serious the talks were or, you know, is this truly a possibility? And then, you know, it was a later round pick. And I think more than anything, it just gave me a lot of encouragement and, you know, upside of to, hey, what I could do, you know, potentially down the road.
You get on campus. How many of your college out, because you mentioned you're playing both ways in high school, mm-hmm. You know, recently decided to make pitching the focus. How many of when you're on the mound in high school, how many ABs went like fastball, 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 or maybe fastball, fastball, curveball? If you thought about like how much did you have to learn on the fly when you go from facing a lot of Legion hitters and stuff like that to facing USD hitters in the fall?
Oh, big time. You know, and really it was my summer, senior summer or summer after my senior year, I went down to play in with a team in Las Vegas. And, you know, Chris Bryant was on there, but we played, you know, majority college teams. And so that was really kind of my first glimpse of like, okay, I need to learn how to pitch here. You know, we're playing kind of college caliber players. And it was definitely a difference. I mean, you could tell the adjustment needed to happen quick and, you know, otherwise it was going to be sink or swim. So I definitely think that when I got to college, like I said, it was such a learning experience for me, just to see the pitching side of things, the analytics, the science behind it, really, you know, to where it was something that I had never really learned before.
At that point, that fall, so fall of 2009, how much analytics was going into it at that point? I know, you know, 10 years later, tech was a big part about how you were training and stuff like that. What was that growth over just that fall? How much information did you have to try to cram in there before your first spring?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, overloaded with information, really, because it was, you know, not just talking about pitch sequences. It was talking about mechanics and, you know, all these different things that, you know, I had really never thought about it. I mean, had a decent enough arm in high school that I could go out and pitch and got away with it, you know, got away with good results. But then, like you said, get to the college level. I mean, now you have to start kind of diving into the nuts and bolts of what you're doing. And yeah, I mean, it blew my mind, you know, just within that first couple of weeks, you know, what the coach was going over. Our pitching coach at the time was Tyler Kincaid, and, you know, was just a brainiac in my eyes, you know, and really opened my mind to just, hey, be as open as you can be and take in all the information. You know, there's really no bad information out there. You got to try everything. And yeah, it was really mind blowing.
Was there any self-doubt in that first fall of, oh, I might not be ready for this level? any like moments, any long bombs or anything like that?
It was definitely more so when you got into like scrimmage games and actually putting it to work. And then you kind of got to see like, oh man, I do have some work to go. I may not be pitching this year as much as I thought I was going to coming in.
So what was that expectation though? You signed with San Diego, your draft pick. You know, you've got this, scouts been telling you have this big arm. What did you think your innings load was going to look like as freshman?
Yeah, you know, I guess that was, I thought kind of going in there that it may have an opportunity to be a starting pitcher. You know, didn't really know a whole lot about the college season and how it worked. And, you know, you kind of pretty much had your solidified Friday, Saturday, Sunday guy, midweek guy, sometimes, you know, alternates. And so when I went in there, I kind of didn't really realize you know, on top of that, I mean, we had some studs that were already solidified. I think that year we ended up having 10 guys drafted, and it was five pitchers, five position players. So, you know, we had a great team already, and I just didn't really realize the caliber of players that we had there until I got there. And, you know, I think it changed pretty quick to understand that, like, okay, I'm a freshman. I'm going to have some growing pains to go through, and, you know, don't be, too frustrated with the inning load, you know, more than anything, just, you know, put in the good work that you can with what innings you do get.
Yeah. Because college baseball is so weird that if you're not slotted into that weekend, or you're not I'm the definite back end guy, especially those first few months, like first few weeks of the season, it's kind of figuring out who's going to be the go-to, and like guy gets hot early in the season, like he's coming out of the bullpen every single weekend in some form or fashion. So as the season goes on, you're not getting in quite as much as you had hoped. When does it turn from like excitement about your first season to frustration, or starting to look at other options?
Yeah, I think, probably about midway through that season, I kind of was getting a little frustrated that I wasn't pitching as much as I would have liked to. But, you know, at the same time, you know, it was hard to keep in mind that I was a freshman, right? And hey, you know, they're trying to get all the freshmen as many innings as they can, you know, for the future, obviously. But like I said, I think I did get a little frustrated just because it was hard to, you know, for someone that was really trying to do pitching for the first time and only pitching, you know, I needed the reps. I needed more reps and more time. And, you know, that was the only way that I was truly going to grow as a pitcher. And so I think towards the end of the year was kind of where my mind started to, you know, think about maybe transferring to a junior college or, you know, another school where I was just going to get that, you know, that availability to pitch just more often, more frequently, get that many more innings so that I could just work on stuff more than anything.
What was the process for that decision? This is pre-transfer portal. So you had to kind of start from scratch again. So when you laid out your options, what were you looking at?
I guess I didn't really know. I knew going into that summer that it was, you know, like I said, I kind of wanted to make a change, but I didn't want to sit out, a full year and just not pitch at all. You know, I think I had seen maybe one or two guys that we had at San Diego that kind of went through that. And, you know, it's a grind during the spring when you have a guy that, you know, can't play, but he's fully healthy, great arm, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so, like I said, I kind of had originally set my mind on going to a junior college right out of the gate, just because I knew I wanted to play. I wanted to get reps. I didn't want to, you know, miss an entire season of playing competitively. So I think, like I said, beginning of the summer was, you know, where I just was really focusing on a couple different junior colleges and kind of going back to, you know, some of the ones that talked to me out of high school, thinking about where I'd want to go, if I'd, you know, give the coaches a call or what to do. Luckily, you know, I called the coach that I had when I was in Las Vegas and said, hey, you know, I'm thinking about transferring. You know, do you know of any junior colleges, you know, kind of in that southern, you know, West Coast area, you know, because I did like to be out there and kind of got comfortable out there. And that was when College of Southern Nevada was kind of brought to my attention. And
arguably
was like, all right,
the most famous junior college baseball team in the country that season.
I was going to say, and yeah, it happened to be the season before. It was, yeah, Bryce Harper. And so obviously they were a big deal. And it was kind of like, yeah, okay, this could be a great opportunity. I'm going to go to a junior college that, you know, just got a ton of recognition with having Bryce there and, you know, has a track record of being one of the top junior colleges in the nation. So for me, it was kind of a no-brainer of, hey, if I'm ready to make the switch and go from, you know, Division I to a junior college, I mean, why not? It's College of Southern Nevada.
With that, you bounce there. You bounce from USD to College of Southern Nevada. Eventually, you go to another school. You go to UNM, which we'll talk about. Did you have any transcript issues over, you know, stuff transferring? Because that's, I think, now in this era, we think, oh, guys are just transferring. They're free agents, whatever. But depending on the school, what accepts what, it can be, you know, one of the guys I lived with in college had to change his major to history just so he could graduate on time because he had stuff not transferred from one school. Did you have any difficulty in that process?
You know, more than anything, it was just some credits from University of San Diego when I went to College of Southern Nevada had to be turned into electives, you know, and then kind of the same thing when I went from Southern Nevada to New Mexico. You know, some of them had to, that were originally maybe core classes at Southern Nevada or core classes at San Diego, ended up becoming electives at University of New Mexico. So, you know, yeah, it was more of just finagling the credits and figuring out, okay, yeah, you know, you're not going to have it as a core class towards, you know, the business school or whatever, but, you know, it'll count as your elective. And so if anything, it kind of burns your electives up, you know, a little bit quicker to where, you know, my junior year, you're taking a lot more core classes than, you know, having, you know, an easy elective on the side.
So you make the move to junior college. What What are upgrades? What's better in junior college? Obviously, it's not a big Division I program, but what are things that you point to and are like, this part about junior college baseball was better than either San Diego or New Mexico?
Honestly, it was the, ability to really focus on baseball. We only had two sports at the school. It was literally just softball and baseball. So, baseball was taken very seriously there. We had a great group of coaches that, I think made it a lot of fun, but guys were there for one reason. It was going to the next level, whether that meant going into, Division I or going, trying to get drafted. And so I do think that there was a big emphasis on, hey, this isn't the stopping point, And I think sometimes in Division I, you see players that they're, they're just very happy to be there. And I think, which is perfectly fine. But sometimes the drive for going on to that next level fizzles a little bit, and I think, like I said, at a junior college, it's kind of that desire to go on to the next level, whether it's Division I or professional baseball.
By the time you've wrapped that year at Southern Nevada, you've been focused on pitching for 2 years now. You're 2 years removed from high school. How different a pitcher were you as far as your stylings, what you did on the bump by the end of that second year of college versus, end of high school, just with a guy with a good arm?
Yeah. I think, I learned a lot. I mean, leaps and bounds within those first 2 years. And like I said, I was lucky enough to have some, I felt like, great pitching coaches during those 2 years with that Tyler Kincaid. And then Nick Aiello was our pitching coach at College of Southern Nevada. I think just being able to understand how to harness your stuff. And like I said, I was still in the process of trying to figure out how to locate my fastball better and, actually locate your off speed, not just throw it in there, just to throw it in there. It really opened my eyes as far as, hey, your fastball is not just one pitch. I mean, if you're moving it up and down and, side to side, it can be used in multiple different aspects. And then same thing with, your off speed, understanding sequences and, how it affects a hitter and what a hitter's looking for in certain situations and that kind of stuff. I think, just like I said, within those 2 years, it was pretty mind blowing how much I felt like I grew. But at the same time, I know that, in my sophomore year of college, it was still just trying to harness everything and understand, hey, okay, I know what I'm trying to do now. Now it's a matter of just doing it consistently. Like I said, getting those reps to, to be able to be that consistent with it.
Can you point to any significant stylings in terms of the actual gameplay between junior college and Division I baseball from, what you hear from guys who went to junior college? Seems like it's an absolute battleground every game. A lot of scrapping and stuff like that. Are there legitimate differences in, I guess, the vibes around the game?
I don't know. I guess it's been so long now. It's hard to kind of replay and see, if it's that much different than, what the Division I level was. I felt like, maybe up and down the lineup, at the Division I level, the lower part of the lineup is still going to, be hard to get through and, not just going to roll over and not that junior college is at all. But I just think that the, consistency and caliber of player is maybe, the entire lineup as opposed to just your first five hitters, six hitters type of thing. And then I would say, the pitching side, just depth. I think at the Division I level, you're able to have more depth, for pitching and position guys. But like I said, there's some junior colleges that are just, you see the same type of talent, if not sometimes better, there. Because like I said, some guys want to go that route. They want to only go, for a year and maybe get that recognition to, go on to the professional level. So,
biggest question about your time at Southern Nevada, what do you do in Vegas when you're 20?
It's not as much fun as you think when you're 20. Yeah. No, it would have been interesting if I was 21 and had been there, but no, being 20, it's just like being any other college kid. We were out in Henderson. So it was the same thing kind of, you're going to practice every day, you're going to classes, you're coming home. We lived with, other baseball players. So it was pretty similar to what we would do anywhere else.
So you've wrapped that year, you've got to find another school, third school, in 3 years. Yeah. What takes you to Albuquerque?
I went on a recruiting trip there and I got to meet the head coach, Ray Birmingham.
What's the first impression of Ray Birmingham?
Just a great guy. Honestly, I still have a great relationship with him to this day. He's a straight shooter. And that was one of the things that I think I appreciated the most about him. He didn't try to, sell the place. It was more of a, hey, come in and you get the feel for it and you tell us what you think. He didn't have to try to sell it for me. Getting to talk with some of the players when I was on that recruiting trip, you know, from seniors all the way down to the freshmen that were there, all of them had nothing but good things to say about the coaching staff, the university, the baseball program. I mean, all that stuff. And I think there was a lot of, you know, excitement that the program was heading in the right direction with Ray Birmingham being the head coach. And so I guess I kind of looked at it as something that I wanted to, you know, jump on the ship with them and be a part of, and, you know, push the rock in the same direction and try to, you know, get this program to where Coach Birmingham wanted it to be.
And those recruiting trips after a year at Southern Nevada, how much was playing time in a rotation spot discussed? Because at that point now, you're 20, got 2 years of college left. You don't really have as much time to wait around and kind of earn that rotation spot.
No, yeah, and I think that was kind of one of the things that Coach Birmingham and I and pitching coach talked about, you know, when I went on my recruiting trip, was they said, hey, we need starting pitching. And, you know, for me, I thought, hey, that's great, because I need reps and I want more innings and I want to throw and I want to be, you know, one of those weekend guys. I mean, like I said, when I was at San Diego, I kind of idolized the three weekend starters, because they were just kind of, you know, your captains as pitchers. You know, you followed them, you wanted to do everything, you know, kind of what they did. And so to be a weekend starter, you know, was definitely one of my goals coming out of junior college, you know, to go on to the division one level and be, I mean, I wanted to be in that Friday or Saturday night spot, you know, going game one against their best pitcher as well. And I got the chance to do that. When I went to New Mexico, you know, I went there and originally, yeah, was one of the weekend starters. I think I was maybe our Saturday or Sunday guy to start out the year, and ended up just not throwing very well. You know, got myself in trouble, was throwing too many balls. And like I said, was really, you know, in all honesty, was really focused on the next level, you know, trying to get drafted and trying to, you know, go on to the next level and get seen and get, you know, scouts' eyes on me and all that stuff, and kind of got away from my game plan, you know, originally, you know, when I went to college, which was, hey, just learn as much as you can and, you know, let the other stuff take care of itself. But, you know, really just try to hone your craft.
That first year at New Mexico, you're draft eligible for the third time in your life. You got popped out of high school, popped out of junior college. You don't get drafted as a junior. Where was your mentality at that point? Was that a panic point?
No, you know, if anything, it was probably more of a humbling point for sure. You know, because I think out of high school and then out of junior college, I got drafted. And like I said, both of them were later rounds. But I think, you know, I thought, okay, well, yeah, it'll happen. You know, it'll for sure happen when, you know, the time comes. Well, and then after my junior year, when I didn't get drafted, it was kind of like, oof, hey, back to the drawing board. You know, we got some work to do if we want to, you know, keep this train rolling after my senior year. But it was also a good thing for me, I think, because I came in, you know, my senior year with the mentality of, hey, I'm going to have as much fun as I can and play it as if it is my last year of baseball. And, you know, if things go well, it'll take care of itself. And that's kind of exactly what I did. I just really wanted to play for the team, and I wanted to pitch my butt off and, you know, really just work on my pitching and get better and try to, you know, be as much service to the team as I could be. And like I said, luckily it did take care of itself and, you know, ended up better.
Well, yeah, you mentioned that junior year, you know, the tough one, you carry a 5.52 ERA. You didn't miss a ton of bats. Senior year, you carry a 2.9, missed a bunch of bats, walk less guys, first team all Mountain West. Last seven starts are absolutely nails. Do you attribute it all to mentality? Like, in, you know, I use this analogy a lot. You play like the NCAA football game, and between a guy's junior and senior year, he jumps up like seven, you know, his rating jumps at 7 points or something. Your rating, just based on performance, jumped up. What do you attribute that to? Is that learning a different way to go about your business, or is it just pitching relaxed?
I think it was a combination of both for sure. You know, we got a new pitching coach that year, which I really clicked with, Dan Spencer was his name. And he actually used to be the head coach at Texas Tech for a little while. He was a pitching coach at Oregon State. And then was at Washington State for a little while as well. And when he was at New Mexico, you know, he really wanted to basically sat me down and just said, hey, let's just focus on your mechanics. Let's get you back to throwing strikes, get the ball over the plate, you know, and make your stuff work, you know, make hitters put the ball in play. And we kind of, you know, like I said, kind of reined everything in, because the year before I had, you know, issues with walking guys and throwing too many pitches. And I mean, you know, I'm 75 pitches into the game and I'm only in the third inning, you know, when in my junior year, whereas senior year, you know, the mentality became, hey, let's throw the ball over the plate and let my defense work for me. And like I said, you know, you combine that with pitching relaxed and, you know, actually enjoying yourself and telling yourself, hey, you got nothing to lose, you know, go out there and have fun. Play like it, you know, could be your last year. So I definitely think that was, you know, the two key things that attributed to, you know, the more success my senior year.
So with your 3 years at programs, obviously Division I, a little different than junior college, but I'm always interested in the fall, especially at a 4 year school. The fall can be a bummer. It can be long. It's just scrimmaging. It's just working out and stuff like that. You've had three looks at it. The junior college fall, obviously you get more baseball and stuff like that. What in your mind, what's the best way to run a fall, or what are great things that you can do in the fall? What are things in the fall that you wish you would just get cut out completely?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, every fall, no matter if it's junior college, I mean, high school, even, you know, Division I, wherever, you know, it's really about getting reps in, you know, everyone getting their work in, staying sharp, getting stronger, you know, getting your conditioning level up, that kind of stuff. And, you know, for me, I think the most important thing in the fall for, you know, any program is really building the camaraderie. And I think that's what we did at New Mexico, and was really eye-opening for me to see, because, you know, my junior's year and senior year, I mean, we had great camaraderie within our team. We had a great group of guys, and that was kind of the focus of the fall was, hey, we're going to be as close-knit group as we can be, and, you know, not forcing it, but just we're going to have fun with each other. We're going to get to know each other. And, you know, you really kind of start to get, you know, to where these people are, you know, your best friends, and you want to play for them, and you want to play with them, and you want to just have a good time on the diamond with them. So I definitely think that, you know, that's the number one thing for me in the fall is just building the camaraderie and building the team, you know, the team aspect of it.
With only 2 years at the school, like I spent actually 5 years at my school. So I built some relationships as far as how I felt about other schools in the conference. You seem a bunch. With only 2 years, were you able to build a significant hate towards another school? Is there anyone that you're just not a fan of?
No, you know, I really can't say that I had a hate towards any other school or team or anything like that. You know, I think, gosh, no, I mean, I know that we had the, the Rio Grande rivalry with New Mexico State, but I, you know, like I said, I wasn't there my freshman and sophomore year to see the history of the battle in and everything. You know, I kind of came in as the junior and I don't know, it's not too bad. I guess no teams that come to mind as far as hate anyways.
How did you feel about the thin mountain air at Albuquerque? Any balls that go out on you that you wish you could have back?
Humbling experience. Humbling experience. Yeah, no, you know, that's the way that my pitching coach my senior year, you know, he sold Albuquerque perfect. He said, this is the best, it's not an easy place to pitch, but it's the best place to learn how to pitch because you have immediate results. I mean, hey, you leave a ball up over the, you know, middle of the plate, even if a guy doesn't get, you know, 100% contact on it, it still might fly because you're a mile high. So, you know, it's a matter of just understanding, hey, you got to learn how to miss bats. You got to learn how to get ground balls, you know, stay away from big fly balls, you know, and then kind of, I guess it's kind of ironic that my last 2 years, it was all about pitching up in the zone and trying to get fly balls. But yeah, no, it actually did, you know, make you focus on, again, going back to the drawing board of learning how to pitch. So
season wraps, you guys wrap at the Fullerton Regional. 2013 MLB draft, you're a senior. It is now your job to save someone some money, because that is in this, yes, in this draft and in the years of bonus pools, it is the senior's job to get drafted in the top 10 rounds, save someone some money so they can pay some 18-year-old a bunch. Yeah. Were you told before the draft what the likely outcome, like how are you gaming that? Because it's not like, it's not as much on talent level. You were a more attractive senior sign, like in your BA scouting report, you're coming off a good year, you've got a good arm. You know, so there's appeal there. You just have no leverage. So going into that draft where you have to sign, what was kind of the game plan?
You know, I think I had such a better understanding, mentally, as far as how the draft worked and, you know, understanding that, hey, yeah, senior, you know, they save you money and all that kind of stuff. So like I said, I think going in with, I wouldn't say low expectations, but expectations that, hey, yeah, you're not going to, you know, be a big money guy or anything like that. But it's more about getting your foot in the door and the opportunity, and, you know, what you do with that opportunity is what really matters. And so I think having that mentality going in, you know, I wasn't really expecting or dissatisfied with where I went, or, you know, I wanted to go earlier or get more money or anything like that. You know, I was very happy. And I mean, when my name, yeah, I got picked in the sixth round, I mean, I was, you know, shocked that I actually went that early. And, you know, but obviously knew, of course, I'm going to save them some money, but hey, I'm just happy for the opportunity that I get to, you know, keep it going after my senior year. And then now it's just on me what I need to do once I'm in the door.
You and I, we talked about this a little bit last year about, you know, if you would have signed out of high school, maybe you're afforded more chances or you know, give it a little extra time for whatever it might be. Just give it a little more status, because if you sign out of high school, you're probably getting a little bit more money, a little bit more invested in you. What was gained in the 4 years in college that you that you think benefited you a little bit more than just the extra, you know, the extra leeway that you might have gotten at 18?
You know, I think just the adversity that you go through in college, and, you know, you're with an older group of guys, you know, when you're a freshman and sophomore, you're kind of the, you know, small fish in the big pond again. You know, you're not like in high school, you're the big fish in the small pond. Well, you go back to college and it's kind of like starting back over, you know? And I think just the growing pains, the adversity that you go through a little bit in college, but having, you know, everyone behind you and that support system with a college team, I think is huge. You know, I think when you're in the professional side and then it's your job, I think it can be a little bit more stressful, a little bit more taxing mentally on guys. You know, I think that's when you see, you know, when guys are struggling, you know, the wheels really turning, because, you know, they don't have a lot of camaraderie picking them up and, you know, playing for the team type of thing, and only, you know, only 20 guys with you type of deal. So I definitely think that college was a big thing for me. Just like I said, having that support system of the team, you know, while you're going through adversity. And like I said, you know, I didn't have really a great college career until my last year, my senior year. So I definitely think it was a big benefit for me.
How that kind of mentality of it's not as team focused, the thing about pro ball, how quick does that kind of come into play? Is that apparent? You go out and you're in short season, you know, right after you sign. Is it kind of apparent right away that things are different? Because like most guys from short season are coming either from high school where they're, you know, their high school team, everyone was big, we got to win state, whatever it is, college, we got to win, you know, got to win conference, got to make regionals, that sort of thing. Does it gradually kind of turn into a little more individualistic, or, you know, as you get older, you get higher in the minors, or is it from the get-go, hey, this is very different?
No, I definitely think that there's a lot of camaraderie at the lower levels of the minor league side. I think when you get into the higher levels and there's, you know, a lot more transactions and business side of things, of course it's going to fizzle, you know. You're playing, I mean, the team that you start with, you know, for a AAA season, the beginning of the year, I mean, 9 times out of 10 is very different at the end of the year, you know, just with different transactions and releases and guys moving here and trades and all that stuff. So I do. I think that, you know, at the lower levels, there's still that camaraderie and, you know, everyone's excited. Everyone's, you know, excited to finally be in the door. And, you know, I think that, you know, especially I would even say AA on down, you know, everyone is pushing for their organization, you know, and I think the camaraderie, you know, around the organization is 100% there. The individual team is hard because, you know, everybody's playing to get off the team. You know, you want to go up to that next level. So in a sense, it's like, yeah, I mean, you love the team you're playing with and the guys you're on the field with, and you're pushing, you know, as hard as you can. But at the same time, you're hoping to get sent up, you know, or sent off the team. So it's just a completely different way of looking at it. You know, you're kind of sitting there like, yeah, you know, I don't want to be here all year. I love the team. I love the guys, but I want to pitch my way to the next level.
I definitely want to come back to that when we get talking about especially life in the upper levels, because you spend a lot of time in the upper levels. So I want to talk about that aspect. But you're that first year when they send you to short season, and then a little bit in you split some time in low A as well. They send you to the bullpen, and your nails, your lights out that first year in the bullpen. You'd gone from the spring. What was different about coming out of the bullpen, that mentality, whatever the game plan was there, versus you know your starts that spring in New Mexico? Like, were you, did you drop a pitch? Did you, you know, what were you changing out there?
You know, honestly, I kind of looked at it, I guess, mentality almost like going back to that perfect game deal. You know, when I went down to Florida out of high school, it was kind of like I only had 2 innings to showcase what I had as a pitcher. So I was going to empty the tank and let it all eat and, you know, show you what I have. And I kind of took that mentality, you know, when I was closing my very first year with the Rangers in short season. I kind of was just like, hey, I'm going to go out there. I know I only have an inning or two, and I'm going to show them everything I got. And that's what I did. And I think, you know, having been built up from my college season, you know, I think I threw somewhere around 90, 93 innings or somewhere around there. But I think having that stamina, you know, and then when you go and you're only throwing one inning at a time, the velocity started to go up a little bit more. I think my off-speed stuff got a little bit sharper, a little bit more crisp, just because, you know, as it kind of throwing a little bit more on a consistent basis instead of every, you know, Friday. I was throwing, you know, 3-4 times a week. And so it was nice. I actually really enjoyed it a lot.
Did you have any desire to remain in the bullpen at all? Was there any part of you was like, hey, ain't broke, don't fix it? Like, let's just run this out there.
100%. And I did. And I, you know, there's a big part of me that definitely wanted to stay in the closing role and, you know, see kind of how quick type of thing you can get sent up, or at least be moved up the organization. But at the same time, I also, you know, got a little eye opening, you know, I think when I went to instructional league that year, or after that season, at kind of how valuable, you know, starting pitchers are in baseball and in these professional organizations. I mean, you know, you're getting the reps, you're getting, you know, more experience. It's kind of, you know, you're seeing a lot of the, you know, big arms in their organization being starters just because they want them to be as polished as possible for the big league level. So I knew that by them wanting me to become a starter, you know, that was them hoping to, you know, get me a little bit more polished and, you know, maybe be, you know, pay off later down the road for them in the big leagues.
Well, that first full season, you jumped to High A, jumped to the Carolina League, jumped to Myrtle Beach, which, like, if looking through your career, you essentially just spent a lot of time in cities that I like personally, which is, you know, good. Like Myrtle Beach, I go there every year. Frisco, my first date with my wife was actually at one of your starts in Frisco.
Nice.
Yeah, thanks for the tickets. And then Richmond, where I grew up, which we've talked about that. So when you're spending months in these places, how much time do you actually, you know, get to live in a city or get the feel of a city with how much time being a minor league baseball player takes up?
Yeah, I mean, I would say you get to learn the breakfast spots. That's the biggest thing I would say, because, you know, you're at the field pretty much from, you know, 1 o'clock on. So you're really, you know, by the time the game's over, there's not a lot of places open to eat dinner or go check out. You know, a lot of things are closed. But, you know, I was fortunate enough, my wife was with me pretty much every step of the way through baseball, or, you know, out with me during seasons, from that first Myrtle Beach year on. And so we actually really took advantage of every city that we were in and, you know, tried to make it a point to, like, hey, let's get up and let's go find a new breakfast spot this morning. Let's go get lunch here before I got to go to the ballpark. You know, let's get up tomorrow morning and go check out, you know, this area that's 30 minutes away. And so I think that was probably one of the biggest blessings that I had in baseball, was just having her with me to where, you know, we did get to experience a lot of these places that I played to, you know, together. So that was a lot of fun.
One thing that you're in Myrtle Beach, I remember talking to you about, I mean, years ago, I think when you're in Myrtle Beach, you got to watch Joey Gallo take BP every day. I need you to walk me through what the Joey Gallo BP experience is like, who I believe was 19 that year.
Yep. Yep. And I had known of Joey, obviously. But my first year, actually, before I played with him in Myrtle Beach, I had gotten sent up from Spokane, Washington to Hickory, North Carolina, and he hit a home run. And I think it was maybe my first or second game that I was part of the team. And I had never seen, you know, go that far, that high, that quick, everything. That was the first glimpse of, like, oh, that's a big league home run. That's the type of power that you hear people talk about. You just don't ever see. And then to get to play with him the following year, I mean, he just continued to do it. And it was just like, this guy's a freak of nature. I mean, the pop that he has, the power he has, you know, the way that he's able to send a ball is just unbelievable.
How apparent is it when you're playing either with or against certain guys where everyone's a professional, but, like, a guy you play against, you can just point out, oh, that guy's a definite big leaguer. That guy's a definite big leaguer. Like, how often is it that apparent with someone?
You know, it's Double A, you kind of start to be able to, you know, pick and choose guys a little bit more. I mean, just because it comes down to being more polished and more consistent. You know, I think, you know, from A ball on down, or even Double A on down, you know, everybody has a tool or has some tools, you know. And so it's the guys that are actually putting it together on a pretty consistent basis, or having, you know, their one or two plus tools, but then they're backing it up with, you know, decent tools as well to play. I think that's when you kind of look at a guy and go, okay, there's something a little different about him. You know, not only is he for sure using his plus tools, but the other stuff that he has in the bag is what's making him so special. And yeah, you do start to get to, I don't know, kind of identify which guys are, like, hey, you know, like Joey Gallo that year in Myrtle Beach, you know, I think halfway through is when he got sent up to Double A, but it was like even the first month of the season, you know, guys were kind of looking around in the dugout and in the clubhouse kind of like, what is he doing here? What is he even doing here? He is so far beyond here right now. And yeah, of course, you know, shortly after he goes up. So Yeah, you definitely can see which guys maybe, you know, have something a little bit special about them.
Yeah, he has 80 grade power because they don't give out 85s. But yeah. that your first year, your first full season is a solid year. 120 innings, 3.37 ERA. You know, you're in high A, so you're age appropriate. You know, it's not as if you're dominating the lower levels. We talked about if you're, you know, high schooler, you get those chances, you get that preference as a signee. After turning in essentially a great debut season, and then your first full season is quality, you're primed to go to Double A. Did you notice any more favor with the organization? You know, good enough to go to the fall league. Like, did you feel a part of plans? Do you get a sense of that, of who's in their plans, who's not in their plans?
Definitely, I think, you know, especially, you know, when you get invited to the fall league, you know, you hear about it being kind of such a kudos type of league to go to. And so that's exactly what it was when they, you know, asked me to go to the fall league. I mean, I was, you know, ecstatic to be able to go, but also, you know, gave me some comfort knowing that, hey, this organization thinks highly of me, you know, and they are looking at me as maybe being a guy that can contribute here sooner rather than later. And so I definitely think it, you know, it worked both ways. It was kind of a comfort feeling for me and, you know, that the organization was behind me, but then it just made me want to, you know, pitch that much better and play that much harder and, you know, continue going, you know, to, you know, give them back what they're putting into me.
Fall league is basically every team is an all-star team. You know, we talked about Joey Gallo jumping out. Was there someone on your fall league team who you were just like, this is like a freakish human?
Hunter Renfro was one of them. His arm from the outfield, and then, you know, he has pop just like Joey does, or very similar to. He was one that kind of stood out to me. It's just, man, you know, talk about a guy that has tools and, you know, is a stud. I played in the fall league 3 different years. So they all kind of start blending together of which guys he played with at certain times. But, no, there is just so much talent in that league. And it's just a fun league to watch. And, you know, the guys, the tools that they have, it's really cool.
Yeah, people always talk about, oh, I want to go to spring training and stuff. Like, I feel like going to the fall league because, like, the rare games that go on MLB Network, there's, like, no one there. It's like you could just sit on the baseline and see, you know, future all-stars. But you get that season in Myrtle, good enough. You know, you go to the fall league, spring training, you snap your Achilles.
Yep.
If you're just reading that as a fan, it's like, oh, this guy tore his Achilles, he's on the IL, you know, we'll see him when we see him. What is being the player? Spending a summer rehabbing, that whole thing. Like, what does that do to your psyche when you're on this up, basically since your senior year of college, you've been on this upward momentum of, you know, this upward trajectory, and then everything gets, you know, paused.
Yeah. And I think that was the hardest part, to maybe cope with a little bit was, yeah, the fact that, you know, I was kind of on the up and up with them, and I was, you know, trending in the right direction, and I was slotted to hopefully go to Double A that year and pitch. And, so I guess, you know, it was all that work that you do in the off season and, you know, all your expectations that you have going into the season. And then something like that happens in, you know, spring training. And it's like, oh, all of a sudden, hey, not going to have a season. You know, your focus has to switch from, you know, the season and what you're going to do and, you know, what level you're going to hope to get to, okay, now I just need to focus on getting my body back to where it was so that I can compete again. So it was definitely a little bit of a blow to, you know, kind of bring the trajectory on up to a halt and just have to sit, you know, not sit, but, you know, rehab for an entire summer in Arizona and, you know, beautiful 120 degree heat. And but no, it was great. You know, we had a great just core group of rehab guys that year. The rehab staff that the Rangers had, I mean, I loved. I mean, they were great with me. I still keep in touch with all of them to this day, just because, like I said, they were so instrumental in, you know, getting me back on the field. And I was able to play, you know, that fall in the fall league, which, you know, I was happy that I was able to salvage something, you know, somewhat of a league out of that year.
Rehab, you always hear, like, the, I guess, the cliche thing, I'm going to come out of this stronger, I'm going to get better, I'm going to, you know, do this thing. It's kind of like, I'm going to be in the best shape of my life, that whole thing. Part of that, I'd imagine, is a mentality thing. You're doing yourself a disservice if you're not thinking that you'll come out of this stronger. But how much is reality? When you're, because you've, right, you know, unfortunately that injury is not the only time that you've had to rehab, and we'll get into some of that.
Oh, yeah.
But how much is, like, are you striving for things of, like, I can be better from this? Or is it like, I just need to tell myself that and I need to get healthy?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, you know, when an injury happens and your mind kind of switches into that, okay, now I need to go to rehab, you know, immediately you try to kind of psych yourself up into, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to get so much better at this. I'm going to get stronger here. I'm going to do all these things. And, you know, that I wouldn't say that that fizzles, but it definitely tones down and reality ends up setting in, you know, about a month into the rehab. And it's like, ooh, this is going to be a grind. You know, this is going to be a little bit lengthier than I thought it was going to be. And, you know, harder just to continue pushing and pushing and pushing. Because you go through some different growing pains and, you know, especially when you're getting back on the mound and, you know, what you think you can just pick up like that, you know, it's kind of relearning it again, relearning your body and having to, you know, get consistent with everything. And so I think it's, you know, sometimes frustrating because what used to be, you know, maybe come a little bit easier, a little bit more consistent, you know, when before the injury, you know, now you're having to go back and work on stuff that, you know, you really never had to pay attention to in the past.
You get back out there in 2016, you make the bump up to Frisco, you're in the rotation for a couple months, get hurt again, more rehab. The decision to go to the pen, was that an organization decision? Was that something you asked for? Was it a meet in the middle thing?
No, I definitely think it was, I mean, we were both on the same page. I think it was to kind of limit my innings and protect myself a little bit and, you know, try to keep me on the field was, I think, the biggest goal with putting me back in the bullpen from the rotation. I think, you know, going from missing an entire season with the Achilles straight back into a rotation and, you know, trying to keep up the entire starting workload was, you know, just a little bit too much for me too quick. And I guess, you know, like I said, my flexor kind of started flaring up that year and breaking down. And you know, I think that was one of my faults. You know, mentally, I wanted to stay on the field. I didn't want to be hurt again. I had just spent last year hurt. I didn't, you know, want to come off the field. And, you know, your arms, it's like a car motor, you know, that is your livelihood. And, you know, if you hear something in your car, you know, you take it in and get it serviced, get it fixed and get back on the road, you know, whereas I basically press the gas harder.
Knowing what you know now, how much earlier would you have walked off the mound and basically said, I need an MRI, I need something?
Yeah, I think definitely that comes with, you know, just maturity in the game and being around the game long enough to understand that, hey, you know, I mean, yes, you want to be on the field and you want to be serviceable for the organization, but you're only serviceable if you're healthy and you're durable and usable, you know. And so that was kind of the biggest thing was, like I said, that I had to learn the older I got was just, hey, you know, if something's barking, you know, you got to speak up and address it, you know, first, because you're not doing yourself a service by breaking your body down even more, you know, because you may think that you're only doing one part of your body or, you know, hurting one part of your body. Well, in reality, you know, you're compensating elsewhere in your body. So you may be hurting other parts. And so it's very important to, you know, kind of listen to your body and, you know, the second you feel something or are feeling something, you know, yeah, you got to get it addressed and looked at and taken care of. And, you know, it's always better to be safe and sorry, you know, safe than sorry. So.
You make it back for 2017. You're in the bullpen. Bullpen agrees with you. You're dealing. You get bumped to AAA. Mm-hmm. Once you get bumped to AAA, how often do you go to the ballpark being like, today's the day? Am I getting the call today? Like, how do you have to beat that out of your mind?
It's not that you beat it out of your mind. I think you go there with the hope that, hey, I'm on the right track. I'm doing everything right, you know? Hopefully something's happening soon is really kind of what you're hoping for, you know, that they make a move. And, you know, I know the trade deadline happened and it was kind of like, okay, what's going to happen? Who's going to go up? Who could go up, you know, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think for me, I was just happy to finally be up in AAA. And so I wasn't really too, you know, keyed on the big league level, immediately when I got there. I think, you know, I've been pitching for a little while there and have been throwing pretty well. And, you know, I think towards maybe August, July-ish area, I was kind of like, okay, you know, September's around the corner. And this is still when they had the September call-ups that they could expand the roster to all 40 guys if they wanted to. And I kind of thought, okay, let's just keep going. And, you know, hopefully I'm in those talks. So
kind of same thing as the previous season. How long were you hurting before you actually spoke, especially with like,
yep,
I just got to make it to September.
Yeah. So we had a pitching coordinator that actually called me at the end of July. Or is either at the end of July or midway through July. I think it was midway through July. And he said, hey, well, you know, we're calling up this kid. You know, we just wanted to let you know that your name was in the talk as well. You know, you're doing things right. You're on the right track. Just keep doing what you're doing. And about 2 weeks later, felt the flexor again and it got tight and it, you know, just didn't feel right. And I kind of thought, oh no, terrible timing. You know, we're a month away from September and, you know, not far from the season being over. If I can just push through the end of the season, I'll have the rest time, the downtime. Well, 2 weeks later, I ended up actually tearing my flexor and was out for, you know, not just the rest of that year, but then a little bit of the following year after getting traded.
So again, kind of same question. Would you have, I mean, with prior, you know,
right,
with hindsight, should you have just walked off?
You know, that was a tough year. And I think, you know, there was definitely part of me that wanted to speak up and say something, but at the same time, I think, you know, I was trying to not freak myself out and not think that it was as bad as it actually was, you know, and kind of tell myself, hey, just push through it, you know. And then it kind of became to one outing where, I mean, I couldn't throw, and that was, you know, the last outing of that year that was like, okay, yep, it needs to be fixed. Something needs to be addressed, you know, because something's not right.
That offseason, you're part of a trade for Matt Moore, established mm-hmm. big leaguer. When that happens, when that goes through, do you view that as a positive, or is that a, oh no, I got a whole new group of people I need to impress?
No, I definitely, you know, that's one of the first things that they tell you when you get drafted and you get into professional baseball, and, you know, they talk about, hey, trades are very possible for everybody in the room. You know, you never know who could get traded. But the fact is that if you get traded for the team you're going to, I mean, they want you. And so it is, you know, I think there's some comfort in that you know, that you're going to a team that really wants you and they traded for you and, you know, they have some value in you. And so I was excited for that when I went to San Francisco, just the fact that, you know, hey, they want me, and I was at an upper level, you know, in the AAA area. So hopefully when I get back from this surgery, you know, I'll be right back in that kind of AA, AAA level and, you know, be shooting for the big leagues before long. And, you know, but then there's also the flip side of that where, you know, you just spent 5 years with one organization and all the coaching staff, the players, you know, your teammates, friends, all that kind of stuff. And so it is a little bit of like, you know, leaving home type of feeling.
With that, is there much difference in how an organization coaches you or tells you to go about your business? Like, it's not like you got to San Francisco and they're like, Sam, we want you to be a knuckleballer. But it's like, do they, you know, is there anything of like, hey, especially, you know, techs coming into play at that point, obviously, like mm-hmm. we point to organizations like the Astros or the Rays or whatever will unlock something in someone somehow.
Right.
Is there anything, you know, is there any sort of meaning of like, hey, we like you to do this more. We want you to pitch like this. Or is it like, hey, do the same stuff you were doing in Texas?
Yeah, I think that was kind of the initial meeting and sit down that I had when Bobby Evans was the GM at the time. And, you know, that's pretty much what they said. Hey, we liked what you were doing with Texas. You know, our goal right now is just to get you back healthy and get you back on the field and kind of, you know, get you right back to that spot that you were at in Round Rock. And so I was excited at that, you know, I was coming into an organization, like I said, that wanted me, but also wasn't going to, you know, try to overhaul me and make me a completely different pitcher or, you know, throw so many different things at me that, you know, I wasn't comfortable with. I think, you know, they did a really good job of just letting me do my thing and focus on the rehab part of it. And then, you know, the baseball stuff took care of itself.
Same kind of thing of like from a fan's perspective, we hear about injuries. Oh, it takes a guy, you know, this takes some time to come, you know, to come back from or to get right from. When you're going through it, are you, cause it, like your 28th season, your first season in the Giants organization, the numbers are rusty. 2019
right.
is nails. You're kind of back to that guy who you were when you're going through it, when you are quote unquote healthy, like mm-hmm. you're pitching, you're active, but you're not as good, or it's just not as sharp. Are you consciously aware of this is something that I could do that is just not coming out the same? Or is it just a mystery really until you start clicking?
Yeah, no. And that's exactly kind of what happened. I mean, I was, you know, had gotten healthy again, was able to get sent back out to AA, I think, to finish that year. But it was frustrating because, you know, I was kind of trying to feel the command out again, trying to throw strikes, you know, kind of almost brought me back to like my junior year of college, you know, where it was like, I know it's there. I got to find it though. You know, I'm kind of sporadic around the strike zone. I'm not getting ahead of hitters. You know, I didn't have as great a feel of my off-speed stuff as I did before. But at the same time, you know, there comes a time where you have to cut yourself some slack and realize where you're at in the whole process, you know, and kind of reel yourself back and just say, hey, you know, this, you had surgery, you had an arm surgery. It's not going to be, you know, the next day, all of a sudden it just clicks and you just have everything back. I mean, it's a grind and you go through it and, you know, there's the ups and downs. Some days your arm feels great, you know, and then there's some days where it's grindy and, you know, you always have this envision in your head that once I come back from surgery, like you're never going to have a problem with that arm again. Right. But reality is, yeah, you have probably more aches and pains than you did before. It's just different. And it's just being able to feel, you know, understand your arm, listen to it and really know, you know, what's hurting and what's just sore, you know, an achy. And, you know, I think that's part of the hurdle of getting back into a regular season and pitching on a consistent basis, is understanding that, you know, there's going to be a little grinding that you're going to have to push through, and you can't just freak yourself out at the first thing you ever feel. So
essentially your last 5 years of pro ball are spent doing a little shuffle between double A and triple A, between injuries and organization changes, stuff like that. You're, you know, you kind of split in time. Are there any actual noticeable differences between pitching in double A and pitching in triple A? Like, is there anything you can point to of like, this is way harder in triple A? Cause they talk about high A to double A being the jump besides the jump, you know, to the big leagues. Is there, is there much of a difference?
You know, for me personally, I truly felt like the jump was between double A and triple A. I thought going from high A to double A wasn't as bad of a jump. I think that, you know, you get to double A and you're still seeing guys that have, like I said, crazy tools. You know, some guys have great power, but they may not have the plate discipline yet. You know, some guys have a great arm, but they're not throwing strikes yet or consistently. You know, sometimes, you know, they come out one day and they're nails. The next day, you don't know who you're getting. Whereas in AAA, I think it's a little bit more polished, and you're kind of starting to see guys that are, you know, like I said, more consistent pitchers. You kind of know what to expect with guys every day out. You know, up and down the lineup, you're seeing guys that are sticking to an approach and have their approach, and, you know, they're executing their approach is what's so impressive, I think, in AAA, you know, where you can throw a great fastball located exactly where you wanted to and you thought in your mind. But if it plays into that hitter's approach, I mean, he doesn't miss it at that level. He, you know, 9 times out of 10, they don't, you know, they're just, they are just a more mature player, I would say.
With that, with a guys having these approaches and sticking to them and stuff like that, and you also knowing who you are as a pitcher, this, I'm trying to figure out how to word this. When you're on the bump, did you, at that high level, do you pitch more to a hitter's weaknesses? Because at that point you have track record, you have stats, stuff like that. Do you pitch more to their weaknesses or what you do well?
You know, I think it depends on, and luckily the last couple of years, we had so much data and analytics that always helps as well. But no, I think at the end of the day, the general rule of thumb for everybody is, you know, you stick with your strengths first. You know, that's what you're comfortable with. You know, you don't ever want to kind of go back to the dugout thinking, oh man, I threw my third best pitch because I thought that that guy can't handle it. You know, I would rather throw my best pitch and get beat, you know, than trying to compete with my fourth best pitch when I know that, you know, it's just not there. So I definitely think that, yeah, sticking with your strengths is one of the biggest things. But I also think, you know, at that level, you have to have the feel for the game to understand, hey, sometimes hitters are hot and it doesn't matter what your strength is. You know, you have to have a better plan and a better approach and, you know, be able to, every day you should be able to utilize at least two pitches, especially out of the bullpen, in my opinion. I mean, you may not have the location of the secondary pitch, but just, you still have to throw it, you know? And I think that that's something that regardless of, you know, if it's there or not, you just have to go with it.
You mentioned the data, the analytics. Towards the end of your career, tech is really taking a hold. And like, in, I think your last year in the Giants organization, they had a video with, they did a little video with you, like how to train like a pro pitcher, stuff like that. We've seen all the, you know, the screen spitting out a bunch of numbers and the slow-mo spinning balls and stuff like that. What did tech specifically do to make you better? Like, what did you learn about yourself through, you know, through the computer that you could learn from a pitching coach just watching you?
Yeah, I truly think that the technology side of baseball, I mean, has just simplified it for the player, honestly. And it's taken a big weight off of a lot of players' shoulders because it's, you know, it tells you literally, hey, here's what you do really well, stick to that. And here's, you know, the results that you get with it. You know, I think that before when I was a starter, there were times where it was like, oh yeah, you know, my changeup's decent, my slider's pretty good, my curveball is not bad, you know, whatever. Well, and then you look at the tech side of it and you go, okay, so we're going to can the changeup, we're going to can the curve, we're going to go fastball slider, because according to the analytics, those two do not play. And, you know, and then you go back and look at the stats of them, you go, yeah, that's right. Yeah, my changeup did get hit pretty hard. Yeah, my curveball usually stayed up. So, no, I definitely think that the technology side just really simplified it and made it, you know, eye-opening for players to understand, hey, here's what you do really well, and just stick to that. And if you can execute what you do really well, you'll have good results.
So the pandemic hits, season is postponed, it's up in the air at that point. Guys like you, minor league vets, hadn't hit hadn't had no service time, didn't sign for a ton of money, don't have millions in the bank to sit on. How did you spend that time? And was it in a full-blown panic?
No, it was not a full-blown panic. My wife and I, we actually moved up to South Dakota during that little shutdown period. Partially was just to kind of come back. That's where I'm from, obviously. And so to come back home, my wife works out of here. And yeah, we kind of took full advantage of the downtime. And when we got out to golf, we got out to, just do a lot of active stuff that we haven't been able to do, in a summer for a really long time. So I think that we use that time just to really take it as a breath of fresh air and, kind of our little mini summer within a summer.
You were in kind of a weird spot with your contract and your status and your length of right. service time in the minor leagues. Walk me through your release and your re-signing with the Giants and that how that came about.
Yeah. So the off season before that, that was my first year that I had hit minor league free agency. And I signed with the Giants before actually getting to free agency. Had signed a 1-year contract and
what did that look
hit.
Like compared to your previous 7 years of
unbelievable. it was nice to actually, feel like you have some control of your career, and actually have some say. Yeah, I mean, to be able to say, yes, okay, I'm good with that contract and yes, I want to sign that, was something that I hadn't had for 7 years. So yeah, that was definitely a breath of fresh air to finally be at that point in your career to make those decisions and to be able to weigh your different options and stuff like that. So, like I said, I had enjoyed my time with the Giants and I had really been, excited about what was coming, with the Giants, with, the coaches that they were bringing in, having Farhan, his regime and everything that they've done. I mean, obviously you see what they're doing, even still to this day, yet last year and this year, I mean, it's incredible. They have, a lot of good people in good places. And so I was excited about continuing my development with them and, having a history with the team rather than signing, with a new team and not, having to go relearn everybody and them relearn me and all that kind of stuff. So there was definitely some comfort in re-signing with them. But yeah, then the pandemic hit, obviously the shutdown, they went to the 60-man player pool. Originally I was not on it. And I think about a week later, they ended up adding me to it because one of the players had gotten COVID. And so they were out the entire second spring training. And so I was added to it. At the end of that spring training, they had to add that player back to that 60-man player pool. And the only way to take me off of that player pool was to release me so what they did, they called me basically and said, hey, here's what's happening. This is our only transaction really that we can do, but we want to keep you. And, are you open to signing a 2-year contract? And I said, absolutely. So that's basically how that all happened to where I was, released in a day and then re-signed in a day with them.
And then you spent some time at the alternate site, right?
Yep. Spent that whole year at the alternate site.
What was life like at the alternate site compared to just like being in spring training?
That was tough. The alternate site was tough just in the sense that, we could only go really to the field and to the hotel and that was it. They didn't want us obviously going and getting food out and about doing anything like that with COVID being so prevalent. So yeah, it was a lot of time of just, you're at the field, you're at the hotel room, you're at the field, it's felt very monotonous and just kind of dragging on type of feeling. And then at the same time out in Sacramento, they had, terrible fires that summer. And so the whole, entire sky looked like ominous and, the smoke and all that stuff. And it just, it felt very apocalyptic a little bit, but, it was a grind. It was a grind, but we had a good group of people and group of players in that alternate site and coaching staff that, I felt like we really did grow and like get a lot out of that alternate site as far as just as a player.
So I guess circle back to the conversation we were having earlier about how the chemistry between guys at the lower mm-hmm. levels and stuff like that. When you get to the higher levels, you get to, especially spending a lot of time in AAA, especially the alternate site where it's like, you are not there even there to play games. You are there to get called right. up if the Giants need you, you had like, there was the Adley Rutschman video that came out the other day. He gets called up to the big leagues for the first time. All his teammates pile in. They're all happy for him. Adley yeah. Rutschman isn't really, he's not taking anybody's spot. That spot is his. He was going to, he's going to be in the big leagues for 15 years. when you're, you know, you guys are all up there, your teammates, you're playing games, whatever, but in AAA, it's guys trying to get back. It's guys trying to get there for the first time. It's a lot of guys who are those big league, like those 4A guys, you just need the shot. Do those tensions ever come through when it's someone else, when it's not you getting the call, when you guys are fighting for these spots versus in like short season, it's like, hey, let's go win the Northwest League. This is fun.
No, you know, I think that at that level and, you know, the maturity of players there, I think it's just a mutual respect, right? It's, you know, AAA always gets the, I don't know, kind of the, what would you call it? The slogan of them of being salty guys. You know, they're all the salty vets that are in AAA. And it's like, no, they're not salty. You know, they're just grinding really hard to try to get back to the big league level or get there for the first time. But I don't think that anybody's ever, you know, battling to the point where they're upset or anything like that. It's like I said, there's a mutual respect of, hey, when guys go up, hey, kudos to you. Even if we're in the same position, you know, they take another reliever up to the big leagues as opposed to me. Hey, good job. You clearly are doing something right, you know? And so I think that that's where, you know, the camaraderie is still there in a sense of, you know, guys are all pulling for each other, even though we're competing for the same jobs, everyone's pulling for each other and hoping that we all do really well. You know, our goal is to make it as hard on our GM as possible to figure out who to pull up, you know? So I think there is definitely still that camaraderie there, but like you said, yeah, you're definitely more focused a little bit on your individual path and what I need to do to get up to the big leagues. And, you know, how am I going to separate myself a little bit, or what do I need to do better this month, you know, to, you know, truly get in their eyes and get in their plans.
You played 2021 season, and then, you know, we're talking right now, it's the end of May, and it's your first season out of baseball. What, what was the decide? Like how long after the 2021 season did you decide, I'm done trying, I'm not going to any ball, I'm not going overseas, I'm going back to South Dakota and going to work?
Yeah, I think, you know, part of it was, you know, last year, my last season playing in 2021, you know, still got bit by the injury bug. It was kind of one thing after another. It was a reoccurring issue with my elbow with, kind of some bone spurs and inflammation and, you know, stuff that had kind of flared up in the past and we've, you know, kind of been pushing through for the last 3 years. Well, last year, you know, it kind of did take me off the field for, you know, and that's, I, stayed in extended spring training rehabbing for about the first month of the season. You know, and so that was kind of frustrating. And then when I came back, I think I pitched for about 6 weeks or something like that, and then ended up straining my lat, you know, so it was down for another month, and then came back, pitched for about a month, and ended up straining my groin. And so it was just kind of like one thing after another that was, you know, mentally tough to get through. And, you know, part of me was just kind of thinking, hey, you know, I need to really listen to my body here and figure out what's going on with it. And so that was kind of one of our mindsets going into the off season was, you know, we need to, you know, see a, what opportunities come our way. And if they're worth jumping on and taking, let's, yeah, absolutely. Let's go for it. And if not, you know, we need to do it in a healthy manner. And so that's kind of part of the reason that, you know, we decided to step away from baseball was just, you know, my body wasn't holding up well and I need to get, you know, some things addressed. And so, yeah, I would say those were the two things that played a part.
How much did having 4 years of college help you in terms of, one, the decision to step away, because it's not, you don't have to then go back, but also the decision to play a little longer and to play until you're 30 and keep trying this, because you have the ability to kind of jump into the next phase of your life without the hang up of, you know, I got to go, you know, I got four years of college in front of me.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that was a huge, you know, insurance for me, right? Security type of thing to just know that, hey, when I'm done playing, it's just the next step of life. You know, I'm not having to go back to school and, you know, completely start over and not sure what I'm going to do after baseball. I kind of always had, you know, somewhat of an idea of what I was going to be doing after baseball just because of, you know, what I was studying in college. And so I do think that it made it a little bit easier, obviously, when I was done with baseball to know, okay, hey, here's my direction and here's my path that, you know, I'm going down and what I want to do after baseball. So it was, yeah, not too hard at all as far as, you know, having a plan and understanding what the next step of life after baseball is.
So if you could go back, give yourself a pep talk at 22, right after signing out of New Mexico, what would that pep talk look like?
I'd probably tell myself to listen to my body a little bit better and just, yeah. I mean, like I said, I think that for me, it was understanding, you know, what to push through and what not to push through. Right. And I think that for a little bit in my career, you know, I was the type that I just wanted to compete. I was, you know, I think anybody that played with me will probably, you know, reiterate that I'm a pretty competitive guy and pretty fiery guy, to where, you know, it's hard to pull me off the field, and I'm not one that's going to, you know, usually take myself out of a game. And, you know, maybe that was a little bit to my downfall, but, you know, I think that that would be one thing I would say to, you know, younger players is, you know, understand that, you know, it's a process and it's a long season and there's a lot of games. And, you know, sometimes what, you know, you think taking yourself out of a game or, you know, addressing one issue, what might take 5 months, well, if you catch it early enough, it might take 2 weeks, you know? And so I think that that's a big thing for, you know, when I was younger, I wish I would have heard was, hey, listen to your body and understand that it's okay to miss a little bit of time, you know, if you need to get your body right.
Quick rapid fire for you, and then I'll let you get out of here.
All right. Shoot.
Favorite minor league ballpark?
Oh, God, that's a tough one. Honestly, I loved Frisco. I loved Nashville. I'm just going to say five because it's too hard to pick just one. Yeah. Frisco was awesome. Nashville is great. I was a big fan of Oklahoma City. Let's see. Well, the Vegas Aviator Stadium, the new one is pretty cool as well. And then, oh man, I gotta get one of the lower levels in there too, just cause they're fun. I mean, honestly, Spokane, Washington was such a great atmosphere. And obviously with it being my first, you know, place that I ever got to play, definitely I would say there, just cause it holds some sentimental value for me.
Best hitter you ever faced?
Best hitter I've ever faced. Gosh, I'm trying to think. Oof. I'm not sure. I'm going to come back to that one. I'll keep it thinking though.
Do an ad for the South Dakota Board of Tourism. Why should people give vacation in South Dakota a chance?
South Dakota is great. It has a little bit of everything. In the summertime, it is absolutely gorgeous. It's a beautiful place to go. We have hills, trees, lakes. I mean, you can pretty much do anything outdoors here. In the wintertime, it can get a little chilly, but that just means winter sports. So then you got snowboarding, you know, snowmobiling, all that kind of stuff. It really is just a really safe and cool place to come and, you know, experience just how much you can do around this area.
I would like you to define a little chilly.
So the past two winters have not been bad. Don't worry. I mean, it does still dip down into the negatives from time to time, but we've been lucky. I mean, this past winter, I played golf in December. I played golf in January. So I know it's pretty surprising.
That is,
I mean, don't get me wrong. There were some weeks where we'd have snow and then the next week you could go out and golf. It's kind of been the strangest last 2 years, as far as winters go, but yeah, it can get pretty frigid here from time to time.
All right. This is how we're going to find out if you listen. What is the meanest thing your older brother Garrett has ever done to you?
The meanest thing.
Meanest thing that can be said on a family friendly podcast.
The meanest thing that he's ever done to me? Oh gosh. I don't know.
We're talking prank, middle school bullying, anything.
Man, I felt like one of the meanest things, one day we were throwing a bunch of water balloons off of our back deck and it was bad. I mean, it was at, like, you know, passing cars and stuff. Well, it ended up hitting one and then the police were called and Garrett ends up going and hiding in the shower and lets his little brother sit there and wear it while the police, yeah, had to talk to me and scold me and tell me how bad it is and all that stuff. And so after the police left, I went down, knocked on the door to Garrett, and sure enough, he comes right out of the door, bone dry, never took his clothes off. He just turned the shower on and was sitting in there until the police left. But I would like to hear what he said.
I thought about asking him beforehand, but I wanted to hear yours first. I'll text him when we get done.
He probably won't even remember, to be honest with you. He'll be like, oh yeah, I don't know, I forgot about that. But
no chance.
He was a pretty good, pretty nice older brother. He wasn't too mean. He was a good dude.
Last one. Everyone gets this one. Do you have a nightmare bus ride story from the minor leagues?
Yeah. So when I actually, it was a dream and nightmare, I guess you could say, because I did get called up to AAA, but it was about 1 a.m. We had left Richmond, Virginia at about midnight. And all of a sudden we're pulling over and everyone is kind of like, you know, we're not stopping already. We're only an hour into this drive. We had an 8-hour drive through the night. And next thing you know, I hear my manager say, Wolf, get your stuff, get off the bus. And we're in the middle of nowhere, Virginia, in the middle of the night. And I thought he was kidding. And he said, no, seriously, get your stuff, get off the bus. And so sure enough, I did. I got my stuff. He goes, yep, congrats, you're going to AAA. He goes, but yeah, hang out here. Someone's going to come and get you here in a little bit and take you back to Richmond. And so from, yeah, like 1 a.m. until about 2, 2:30 in the morning, I sat at a gas station outside in the middle of nowhere, Virginia, with my two bags waiting for our clubhouse manager to come pick me up and take me back to Richmond.
Oh, my God. And
just to catch a flight the next morning at like 6 a.m.
That's the best case scenario nightmare bus ride.
Yeah. Story. I was going to say, it's one of those that's hard to complain about because I was getting to go up, but at the same time, I found myself sitting there at about 2 a.m. on the, you know, at the side of a gas station. Just like, this is something else.
That seems like a significant, as someone who used to work in insurance, that seems like significant liability for the organization. Just leave an employee sitting on the side of the road. Sam Wolf, that's all I've got for you. Thanks so much for joining from Phenom to the Farm.
I appreciate it, Kyle. Thanks for having me.
You got it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.